Chapter 5 Nightmares Walking. Leaping from his bed, Perrin snatched his axe and ran outside, barefoot and wearing nothing but thin linen, heedless of the cold. The moon bathed the clouds with pale white. More than enough light for his eyes, more than enough to see the shapes slipping through the trees from all sides, shapes almost as big as Loyal, but with faces distorted by muzzles and beaks, half-human heads wearing horns and feathered crests. Stealthy forms stalking on hooves or paws as often as booted feet. He opened his mouth to shout warning, and suddenly the door of Moraine's hut burst open and Lan dashed out, sword in hand, and shouting, "Trollocs! Wake for your lives, Trollocs!" Shouts answered him as men began to tumble from their huts, garbed for sleep, which for most meant not at all, but with swords ready. With a bestial roar, the Trollocs rushed forward to be met with steel and cries of, "Shinar!" and "The Dragon Reborn!" Lan was fully clothed. Perrin would have bet the warder had not slept. And he flung himself among the Trollocs as if his wool were armor. He decided to dance from one to another, man and sword following like water or wind. And where the warder danced, Trollocs screamed and died. Moraine was out in the night as well, dancing her own dance among the Trollocs. Her only apparent weapon was a switch, but where she slashed a Trolloc, a line of flame grew on its flesh. Her free hand threw fiery balls summoned from thin air, and Trollocs howled as flames consumed them, thrashing on the ground. An entire tree burst into flame from root to crown, then another and another. Trollocs shrieked at the sudden light, but they did not stop swinging their spiked axes and swords curved like scythes. Abruptly, Perrin saw Lea step hesitantly out of Moraine's cabin, halfway around the bowl from him, and all thought of anything else left him. The Tuathoan woman pressed her back against the log wall, a hand to her throat. The light from the burning trees showed him the pain and horror, the loathing on her face as she watched the carnage.
"Hide!" Perrin shouted at her. "Get back inside and hide!"
The swelling roar of fighting and dying swallowed his words. He ran toward her.
"Hide, Lea! For the love of the light, hide!"
A Trolloc loomed up over him, a cruelly hooked beak where its mouth and nose should have been. Black mail and spikes covered it from shoulders to knees, and it moved on a hawk's talons as it swung one of those strangely curved swords. It smelled of sweat and dirt and blood. Perrin crouched under the slash, shouting wordlessly as he struck out with his axe. He knew he should have been afraid, but urgency suppressed fear. All that mattered was that he had to reach Lea, had to get her to safety, and the Trolloc was in the way. The Trolloc fell, roaring and kicking. Perrin did not know where he had hit it, or if it were dying or merely hurt. He leaped over it, where it lay thrashing, and ran scrambling up the slope. Burning trees cast lurid shadows across the small valley. A flickering shadow beside Moraine's hut suddenly resolved into a Trolloc, goat-snouted and horned. Gripping a wildly spiked axe with both hands, it seemed on the point of rushing down into the fray when its eyes fell on Lea.
"No!" Perrin shouted. "Light, no!"
Rocks skittered away under his bare feet. He did not feel the bruises. The Trolloc's axe rose.
"Lea!"
At the last instant, the Trolloc spun, axe flashing toward Perrin. He threw himself down, yelling as steel scored his back. Desperately, he flung out a hand, caught a goat hoof, and pulled with all his strength. The Trolloc's feet came out from under it, and it fell with a crash. But as it slid down the slope, it seized Perrin in hands big enough to make two of his, pulling him along to roll over and over. The stink of it filled his nostrils, goat stench and sour man sweat. Massive arms snaked around his chest, squeezing the air out. His ribs creaked on the point of breaking. The Trolloc's axe was gone in the fall, but blunt goat teeth sank into Perrin's shoulder, powerful jaws chewing. He groaned as pain jolted down his left arm. His lungs labored for breath and blackness crept in on the edges of his vision, but dimly he was aware that his other arm was free, that somehow he had held on to his own axe. He held it short on the handle, like a hammer, with the spike foremost. With a roar that took the last of his air, he drove the spike into the Trolloc's temple. Soundlessly it convulsed, limbs flinging wide, hurling him away. By instinct alone, his hand tightened on the axe, ripping it loose as the Trolloc slid further down the slope, still twitching. For a moment, Perrin lay there, fighting for breath. The gash across his back burned, and he felt the wetness of blood. His shoulder protested as he pushed himself up.
"Leah!"
She was still there, huddled in front of the hut, not more than 10 paces upslope, and watching him with such a look on her face that he could barely meet her eyes.
"Don't pity me," he growled at her. "Don't you—"
The murderall's leap from the roof of the hut seemed to take too long, and its dead black cloak hung during the slow fall, as if the half-men were standing on the ground already. Its eyeless gaze was fixed on Perrin. It smelled like death. Cold seeped through Perrin's arms and legs as the murderall stared at him. His chest felt like a lump of ice.
"Leah," he whispered.
It was all he could do not to run.
"Leah, please hide. Please."
The half-man started toward him, slowly, confident that fear held him in a snare. It moved like a snake, unlimbering a sword so black only the burning trees made it visible.
"Cut one leg of the tripod," it said softly, "and all fall down."
Its voice sounded like dry, rotted leather crumbling. Suddenly, Leah moved, throwing herself forward, attempting to wrap her arms around the murderall's legs. It gave an almost casual backwards swing of its dark sword, never even looking around, and she crumpled. Tears started in the corners of Perrin's eyes.
"I should have helped her, saved her. I should have done something."
But so long as the murderall stared at him with its eyeless gaze, it was an effort even to think.
"We come, brother. We come, young bull."
The words inside his mind made his head ring like a struck bell. The reverberation shivered through him. With the words came the wolves, scores of them, flooding into his mind as he was aware of them flooding into the bowl-shaped valley. Mountain wolves almost as tall as a man's waist, all white and gray, coming out of the night at the run, aware of the two legs' surprise as they darted in to take on the twisted ones. Wolves filled him till he could barely remember being a man. His eyes gathered the light, shining golden yellow, and the half-man stopped its advance as if suddenly uncertain.
"Fade," Perrin said roughly,
but then a different name came to him from the wolves. Trollocs, the twisted ones made during the War of the Shadow from melding men and animals, were bad enough, but the murderall...
"Never born," Young Bull spat.
Lip curling back in a snarl, he threw himself at the murderall. It moved like a viper, sinuous and deadly, black sword quick as lightning. But he was Young Bull. That was what the wolves called him. Young Bull, with horns of steel that he wielded with his hands. He was one with the wolves. He was a wolf, and any wolf would die 100 times over to see one of the Neverborn go down. The Fade fell back before him, its darting blade now trying to deflect his slashes. Hamstring and throat, that was how wolves killed. Young Bull suddenly threw himself to one side and dropped to a knee, his axe slicing across the back of the half-man's knee. It screamed, a bone-burrowing sound to raise his hair at any other time, and fell, catching itself with one hand. The half-man, the Neverborn, still held its sword firmly, but before it could set itself, Young Bull's axe struck again. Half-severed, the murderall's head flopped over to hang down its back. Yet still leaning there on one hand, the Neverborn slashed wildly with its sword. Neverborn were always long in dying. From the wolves as much as his own eyes, Young Bull received impressions of Trollocs thrashing on the ground, shrieking, untouched by wolf or man. Those who would have been linked to this murderall, and would die when it did, if no one killed them first. The urge to rush down the slope and join his brothers, join in killing the twisted ones, and hunting the remaining Neverborn was strong. But a buried fragment that was still man remembered. Leah. He dropped his axe and turned her over gently. Blood covered her face, and her eyes stared up at him, glazed with death. An accusing stare, it seemed to him.
"I tried," he told her. "I tried to save you."
Her stare did not change.
"What else could I have done?"
It would have killed you if I hadn't killed it.
Come, young bull. Come kill the Twisted Ones.
Wolf rolled over him, enveloped him. Letting Leah back down, Perrin took up his axe, blade gleaming wetly. His eyes shone as he raced down the rocky slope.
He was Young Bull.
Trees scattered around the bull-shaped valley burned like torches. A tall pine flared into flame as Young Bull joined the battle. The night air flashed actinic blue, like sheet lightning, as Lan engaged another Murdral, ancient Aes Sedai-made steel meeting black steel wrought in Thunkandar, in the shadow of Shale Ghul. Loyal wielded a quarterstaff the size of a fence rail, the whirling timber marking a space no Trolloc entered without falling. Men fought desperately in the dancing shadows, but Young Bull, Perrin, noted in a distant way that too many of the Shinaran two-legs were down. The brothers and sisters fought in small packs of three or four, dodging scythe-like swords and spiked axes, darting in with slashing teeth to sever hamstrings, lunging to bite out throats as their prey fell. There was no honor in the way they fought, no glory, no mercy. They had not come for battle, but to kill. Young Bull joined one of the small packs, the blade of his axe serving for teeth. He no longer thought of the greater battle. There was only the Trolloc he and the wolves, the brothers, cut off from the rest and brought down. Then there would be another, and another, and another, until none were left. None here, none anywhere. He felt the urge to hurl the axe aside and use his teeth, to run on all fours as his brothers did. Run through the high mountain passes. Run belly-deep in powdery snow pursuing deer. Run with the cold wind ruffling his fur. He snarled with his brothers, and Trolloc howled with fear at his yellow-eyed gaze even more than they did at the other wolves. Abruptly he realized there were no more Trollocs standing anywhere in the bowl, though he could feel his brothers pursuing others as they fled. A pack of seven had a different prey, somewhere out there in the darkness. One of the Neverborn ran for its hard-footed forelegs, its horse, a distant part of him said, and his brothers followed, noses filled with its scent, its essence of death. Inside his head he was with them, seeing with their eyes. As they closed in, the Neverborn turned, cursing, black blade and black-clad Neverborn like part of the night. But night was where his brothers and sisters hunted. Young Bull snarled as the first brother died, its death pain lancing him. Yet the others closed in, and more brothers and sisters died. But snapping jaws dragged the Neverborn down. It fought back with its own teeth now, ripping out throats, slashing with fingernails that sliced skin and flesh like the hard claws the two legs carried. But brothers savaged it even as they died. Finally, a lone sister heaved herself out of the still twitching pile and staggered to one side. Morning Mist, she was called. But as with all their names, it was more than that. A frosty morning with the bite of snows yet to come already in the air, and the mist curling thick across the valley, swirling with the sharp breeze that carried the promise of good hunting. Raising her head, Morning Mist howled to the cloud-hidden moon, mourning her dead. Young Bull threw back his head and howled with her, mourned with her. When he lowered his head, Min was staring at him.
"Are you all right, Perrin?"
she asked hesitantly. There was a bruise on her cheek and a sleeve half torn from her coat. She had a cudgel in one hand and a dagger in the other, and there was blood and hair on both. They were all staring at him, he saw, all those who were still on their feet. Loyal, leaning wearily on his tall staff, Shinarans who had been carrying their fallen down to where Moraine crouched over one of their number, with Lan standing at her side. Even the Aes Sedai was looking his way. The burning trees, like huge torches, cast a wavering light. Dead Trollocs lay everywhere. There were more Shinarans down than standing, and the bodies of his brothers were scattered among them. So many. Perrin realized he wanted to howl again. Frantically, he walled himself off from contact with the wolves. Images seeped through, emotions, as he tried to stop them. Finally, though, he could no longer feel them, feel their pain or their anger, or the desire to hunt the Twisted Ones, or to run. He gave himself a shake. The wound on his back burned like fire, and his torn shoulder felt as if it had been hammered on an anvil. His bare feet, scraped and bruised, throbbed with his pain. The smell of blood was everywhere. The smell of Trollocs and death.
I'm all right, men.
You fought well, blacksmith, Lan said. The warder raised his still bloody sword above his head.
Tyshar, Manetherin. Tyshar, Andor.
True blood of Manetherin. True blood of Andor. The Shinarans, still standing, so few, lifted their blades and joined him.
Tyshar, Manetherin. Tyshar, Andor.
Loyal nodded.
Tavirin, he added.
Perrin lowered his eyes in embarrassment. Lan had saved him from the questions he did not want to answer, but had given him an honor he did not deserve. The others did not understand. He wondered what they would say if they knew the truth. Men moved closer, and he muttered,
Lee is dead. I couldn't... I almost reached her in time.
It wouldn't have made any difference, she said softly. You know that.
She leaned to look at his back and winced.
Moraine'll take care of that for you. She's healing though she can.
Perrin nodded. His back felt sticky with drawing blood all the way to his waist, but despite the pain, he hardly noticed it.
Light. I almost didn't come back that time. I can't let that happen again. I won't. Never again.
But when he was with the wolves, it was all so different. He did not have to worry about strangers being afraid of him just because he was big then. There was no one thinking he was slow-witted just because he tried to be careful. Wolves knew each other even if they had never met before, and with them he was just another wolf.
No.
His hands tightened on the haft of his axe.
No.
He gave a start as Massima suddenly spoke up.
It was a sign,
the Shinaran said, turning in a circle to address everyone. There was blood on his arms and his chest. He had fought in nothing but his breeches. And he moved with a limp, but the light in his eyes was as fervent as it had ever been. More fervent.
A sign to confirm our faith. Even wolves came to fight for the dragon reborn. In the last battle, the dragon will summon even the beasts of the forest to fight at our sides. It is a sign for us to go forth. Only dark friends will fail to join us.
Two of the Shinarans nodded.
You shut your bloody mouth, Massima,
Uno snapped. He seemed untouched, but then Uno had been fighting Trollocs since before Perrin was born. Yet he sagged with weariness. Only the painted eye in his eye patch seemed fresh.
We'll flaming go forth when the Lord Dragon bloody well tells us, and not before. You sheep-headed farmers, flaming remember that.
The one-eyed man looked at the growing row of men being tended by Moraine. Few were able to as much as sit up, even after she was done with them, and shook his head.
At least we'll have plenty of flaming wolf hides to keep the wounded warm. No!
The Shinarans seemed surprised at the vehemence in Perrin's voice.
They fought for us, and we'll bury them with our dead.
Uno frowned and opened his mouth as if to argue. But Perrin fixed him with a steady, yellow-eyed stare. It was the Shinaran who dropped his gaze first and nodded. Perrin cleared his throat, embarrassed all over again, as Uno gave orders for the Shinarans who were fit to gather the dead wolves. Min was squinting at him, the way she did when she saw things.
Where's Rand?
He asked her.
Out there in the dark,
she said, nodding upslope without taking her eyes off him.
He will not talk to anyone. He just sits there, snapping at anyone who comes near him.
He will talk to me, Perrin said.
She followed him, protesting all the while that he ought to wait until Moraine had seen to his injuries.
Light. What does she see when she looks at me? I don't want to know.
Rand was seated on the ground just beyond the light of the burning trees with his back against the trunk of a stunted oak. Staring at nothing, he had his arms wrapped around himself, hands under his red coat, as if feeling the cold. He did not appear to notice their approach. Min sat down beside him, but he did not move, even when she laid a hand on his arm. Even here, Perrin smelled blood, and not only his own.
Rand,
Perrin began, but Rand cut him off. You know what I did during the fight? Still staring into the distance, Rand addressed the knight. Nothing. Nothing useful. At first, when I reached out for the true source, I couldn't touch it, couldn't grasp it. It kept sliding away. Then, when I finally had hold of it, I was going to burn them all, burn all the Trollocs and Fades. And all I could do was set fire to some trees. He shook with silent laughter, then stopped with a pained grimace. Sidine filled me till I thought I'd explode like fireworks. I had to channel it somewhere, get rid of it before it burned me up. And I found myself thinking about pulling the mountain down and burying the Trollocs. I almost tried. That was my fight. Not against the Trollocs, against myself. To keep from burying us all under the mountain. Min gave Perrin a pained look, as if asking for help. We dealt with them, Rand, Perrin said. He shivered, thinking of all the wounded men down below. And the dead. Better than that mountain down on top of us. We didn't need you. Rand's head fell back against the tree and his eyes closed. I felt them coming, he said, nearly whispering. I didn't know what it was, though. They felt like the taint on Sidine. And Sidine is always there, calling to me, singing to me. By the time I knew the difference, Lan was already shouting his warning. If I could only control it, I could have given warning before they were even close. But half the time when I actually managed to touch Sidine, I don't know what I am doing at all. The flow of it just sweeps me along. I could have given warning, though. Perrin shifted his bruised feet uncomfortably. We had warning enough. He knew he sounded as if he were trying to convince himself. I could have given warning, too, if I'd talked with the wolves. They knew there were Trollocs and Fades in the mountains. They were trying to tell me. But he wondered. If he did not keep the wolves out of his mind, might he not be running with them now? There had been a man, Elias Machira, who also could talk to wolves. Elias ran with the wolves all the time, yet seemed able to remember he was a man. But he had never told Perrin how he did it, and Perrin had not seen him in a long time. The crunch of boots on rock announced two people coming, and a swirl of air carried their scents to Perrin. He was careful not to speak their names, though, until Lan and Moraine were close enough for even ordinary eyes to make them out. The warder had a hand under the Aes Sedai's arm, as if trying to support her without letting her know it. Moraine's eyes were haggard, and she carried a small, age-dark ivory carving of a woman in one hand. Perrin knew it for an Angrial, a remnant from the Age of Legends that allowed an Aes Sedai to safely channel more of the power than she could alone. It was a measure of her tiredness that she was using it for healing. Min got to her feet to help Moraine, but the Aes Sedai motioned her away. Everyone else is seen to, she told Min. When I am done here, I can rest. She shook off Lan as well, and a look of concentration appeared on her face as she traced a cool hand across Perrin's bleeding shoulder, then along the wound on his back. Her touch made his skin tingle. This is not too bad, she said. The bruising of your shoulder goes deep, but the gashes are shallow. Brace yourself. This will not hurt, but... He had never found it easy being near someone he knew was channeling the One Power, and still less if it actually involved him. Yet there had been one or two of those times, and he thought he had some idea what the channeling entailed. But those healings had been minor, simply washing away tiredness when Moraine could not afford to have him weary. They had been nothing like this. The Aes Sedai's eyes suddenly seemed to be seeing inside him, seeing through him. He gasped and almost dropped his axe. He could feel the skin on his back crawling, muscles writhing as they knit back together. His shoulder quivered uncontrollably and everything blurred. Cold seared him to the bone, then deeper still. He had the impression of moving, falling, flying. He could not tell which, but he felt as if he were rushing, somewhere, somehow, at great speed forever. After an eternity, the world came into focus again. Moraine was stepping back, half staggering, until Lan caught her arm. Gaping, Perrin looked down at his shoulder. The gashes and bruises were gone, Not so much as a twinge remained. He twisted carefully, but the pain in his back had vanished as well. And his feet no longer hurt. He did not need to look to know all the bruises and scrapes were gone. His stomach rumbled loudly.
"You should eat as soon as you can," Moraine told him. "A good bit of the strength for that came from you. You need to replace it."
Hunger and images of food were already filling Perrin's head. Blood-rare beef and venison and mutton and— With an effort, he made himself stop thinking of meat. He would find some of those roots that smelled like turnips when they were roasted. His stomach growled in protest.
"There's barely even a scar, blacksmith," Lan said behind him.
"Most of the wolves who were hurt made their own way to the forest," Moraine said, knuckling her back and stretching. "But I healed those I could find."
Perrin gave her a sharp look, yet she seemed to be just making conversation.
"Perhaps they came for their own reasons, yet we would likely all be dead without them."
Perrin shifted uneasily and dropped his eyes.
The Aes Sedai reached toward the bruise on Min's cheek, but Min stepped back, saying,
"I'm not really hurt, and you're tired. I've had worse falling over my own feet."
Moraine smiled and let her hand fall. Lan took her arm. She swayed in his grip.
"Very well. And what of you, Rand? Did you take any hurt? Even a nick from a Murdral's blade can be deadly, and some Trolloc blades are almost as bad."
Perrin noticed something for the first time.
"Rand, your coat is wet."
Rand pulled his right hand from under his coat, a hand covered in blood.
"Not a Murdral," he said absently, peering at his hand. "Not even a Trolloc.
The wound I took at Falma broke open." Moraine hissed and jerked her arm free from Lan, half fell to her knees beside Rand. Pulling back the side of his coat, she studied his wound. Perrin could not see it, for her head was in the way, but the smell of blood was stronger now. Moraine's hands moved, and Rand grimaced in pain.
"The blood of the dragon reborn on the rocks of Shael Ghul will free mankind from the shadow. Isn't that what the prophecies of the dragon say?"
"Who told you that?"
Moraine said sharply.
"If you could get me to Shael Ghul now," Rand said drowsily, "by Waygate or Portal Stone, there could be an end to it. No more dying, no more dreams, no more."
"If it were as simple as that," Moraine said grimly, "I would one way or another. But not all in the Kariathon cycle can be taken at its face. For everything it says straight out, there are 10 that could mean 100 different things. Do not think you know anything at all of what must be, even if someone has told you the whole of the prophecies."
She paused as if gathering strength. Her grip tightened on the Ungrial, and her free hand slid along Rand's side, as if it were not covered in blood.
"Brace yourself."
Suddenly Rand's eyes opened wide, and he sat straight up, gasping and staring and shivering. Perrin had thought, when she healed him, that it went on forever, but in moments she was easing Rand back against the oak.
"I have done as much as I can," she said faintly. "As much as I can. You must be careful. It could break open again if—"
As her voice trailed off, she fell. Rand caught her, but Lan was there in an instant to scoop her up. As the warder did so, a look passed across his face, a look as close to tenderness as Perrin had ever expected to see from Lan.
"Exhausted," the warder said. "She has cared for everyone else, but there's no one to take her fatigue. I will put her to bed."
"There's Rand,"
Min said slowly, but the warder shook his head.
"It isn't that I do not think you would try, sheepherder," he said. "But you know so little you might as soon kill her as help her."
"That's right,"
Rand said bitterly.
"I'm not to be trusted. Luz Theron Kinslayer killed everyone close to him. Maybe I'll do the same before I am done."
"Pull yourself together, sheepherder," Lan said harshly. "The whole world rides on your shoulders. Remember you're a man, and do what needs to be done."
Rand looked up at the warder, and surprisingly, all of his bitterness seemed to be gone.
"I will fight the best I can," he said.
"Because there's no one else, and it has to be done.
and the duty is mine. I'll fight, but I do not have to like what I've become.
He closed his eyes as if going to sleep.
I will fight. Dreams.
Lan stared down at him a moment, then nodded. He raised his head to look across Moraine at Perrin and Min.
Get him to his bed, then see to some sleep yourselves. We have plans to make, and the light alone knows what happens next.